This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Ahí va a llegar el gol del Arsenal. Ozil marca. Mesut Ozil.
No fucking way. You made me look a right cunt.
This is Arsecast Extra.
Hello there, welcome to another Arsecast Extra. As always, with James from Gunnar Blog, but not as always. There's no kind of morning to wish you. No goodly, no badly, no middle of the roady morning. It's not morning.
No, it's very much evening. We've had to dramatically reschedule things, which is great because it means I can do the podcast with an alcoholic drink, which is, you know, not really excusable when we normally record.
Me too, actually. I've got a glass of wine here, so...
So I've got a cider. I think there's sort of a difference in class between us that's illustrated by our, you know, our choices.
Maybe so. But look, it's that time of the evening. You know, I've had a couple of beers and now it's time for a glass of wine, which should see us through this podcast. But I have to say one thing to you, James. This weekend I've been enjoying ham on Ruffles.
I'm furious. I've seen this via Instagram. Mm. How did you acquire them?
Well, I didn't acquire them as such. They were presented to me as a gift. My daughter is home from Spain. She lives in Barcelona. And she said, before she came over, she said, do you want anything? Do you want me to bring you back anything? And of course, people think, you could get delicious Iberico ham, some olive oil, perhaps some wine from Spain, all the delicious cheeses that come from Spain, many things that people associate with Spain that they could bring back. And I said, yes, I would like some ham on Ruffles, please. And lo and behold, she came up trumps after years and years of parenting and investing everything I have in that lady. She's finally repaid some of that with a big bag of ham. Yes, a big bag of ham on Ruffles. So they're almost gone. I was out last night. You know what I did? I went out last night, Saturday night, for people who are listening to this tomorrow. Had a few beers. It was fine. I came home and I said, you know what I'll do? I'll sit down. I'll have another drink and I will watch Rocky and Righty. That documentary on BT Sport.
Indeed. And I've heard it was quite a good documentary.
It was really good. But what happened was a little voice in my head went off. It said, don't have another drink. You don't need another drink. You've had enough drinks, but you haven't had, Andrew, enough ham on Ruffles. So I sat there going, and I watched about 45 minutes of the Rocky and Righty documentary before tiredness overtook me, and I went to bed and watched the rest of it then before the game on Sunday. And it's great. It's really good, really touching. Great memories of a great player, and obviously Ian Wright is in there as well, who comes across fantastically well. I think you get the very best of Ian Wright from that documentary as well, so it's well worth a look. If you just search on Google for Rocky and Righty, some, you know, enterprising Arsenal fans have uploaded it for the people who can't get BT Sports, so you can find it pretty easily, and I would definitely recommend it. For anyone.
Fair
for
enough. And if you can watch it with ham on Ruffles, that's only going to augment the experience.
Oh, absolutely. It's everything is better with ham on Ruffles. That should be their slogan. You
know. I'm so jealous. I mean, honestly, I'm going to have to go to Spain myself and get hold of some. Or, you know, if anyone's coming back from Spain to London, just fill your suitcase with ham on Ruffles. I will pay you handsomely for them.
And this is not a lie. This is not a joke. He will.
No, this isn't a joke. This is a genuine pledge. the markup you could charge on them would be outrageous. I will bankrupt myself in pursuit of those delicious crisps.
You're really not a good negotiator, are you? I would not want to go into a negotiation with you.
This is how Dick Law goes into negotiations.
Dick Law, we'll give you you whatever you want. Actually, that no, he's like, that's the reverse Dick Law in a way, isn't it?
To be fair, that's, yeah. I mean, Dick Law would say, I see you're having ruffles. I offer you, you know.
Would you like, yeah. Would you like this bag of beans that I've cultivated myself from the ground? I promise they'll grow to be a giant beanstalk. Honest.
Yeah, yeah, it's much more that approach. It was interesting, actually. I saw you, was it you or Ask Blog News, retweeted a clip of David Dean talking about signing Ian Wright. Are you aware of this clip that I'm talking about?
Yes.
And he talks about the negotiation with the chairman of Crystal Palace, Ron Nodes, at the time. And he says, you know, kind of name your price for Ian Wright. And he says, oh, I don't know, 2.5 million. And David Dean turns around and says, okay, we're offering you 2.5 million for Ian Wright. And you do think, well, how far removed we are from doing business so efficiently in this day and age.
Yeah, I love this. You see, this is the thing that gets to me about transfers in a way, is people go, oh, you know, they're ever so complicated, transfers. You know, there's a lot going on in a transfer. Mm. There's so much stuff and things and negotiations. But is there really... Is it not just a case of, how much would you like me to pay you for this human being? It's the oldest fucking trade in the book. How much do you want for this man? And I will pay you whatever it is. Or I'll, you know, we'll negotiate a bit. You want a 10 or I'll give you 7. You want 9, I'll give you, you know, it can't surely take that long, you know?
Yeah, I agree. Why can't people just buy people easily like they did in the old days? Buy human beings off one another like commodities.
Yeah.
It's like the good old days.
Yeah, what was it? There was nothing wrong with the world back then, let me tell you.
Simpler times.
Jesus.
Yeah. But there you go. I mean, look, there's been a football match. I have been working in another capacity all day, so I was following the football match anxiously on my phone, was seeing the odd clip online. I've now watched the highlights. It looked to me like a breathless encounter. I'm glad my poor little heart didn't have to put up with it in the course of 90 minutes. Is that a fair assessment?
It was a really, really odd game. I thought it was weird and strange. Okay. And like, it wasn't a bad game. Like, City scored early, they hit the post again, you know, we equalised a couple of times, but there was just this undercurrent of weirdness about the game itself. I don't quite know how to describe it. I suppose the first thing I should say is that my fear was going into this game that we were going to see a West Brom-esque performance from Arsenal, a team that wasn't up for it in any way, a team that wasn't prepared to fight, a team that will, you know, if something went wrong, would just crumble. And things went wrong in this game. You know, we conceded after 5 minutes. We conceded just after we equalized, rather pathetically. It was awful. We lost our captain and best defender at halftime. So there were things that went against us. We had two central midfield players on yellow cards from relatively early on in the game. I think both Coquelin was about 15 minutes in. Xhaka after maybe half an hour, something like
those
that.
Those guys, you surprised me.
I know. I was like...
Who saw that coming?
Wow, that was crazy. I was accused of mocking Xhaka earlier on, and I wasn't mocking him. I just said, you know, after he got booked, his last 8 Arsenal appearances have seen him pick up 1 red card and 6 yellow cards from 8 appearances. You know, that's a shitload of cards.
That's a lot of cards by anyone's standards.
Yeah.
He's making Francis Coquelin look, you know, relatively conservative.
We should change his name to Granite Hallmark. He's got that many cards. but, I was looking at those two guys and you're thinking, well, all it would take is one mistimed tackle. And then, you know, we go down to 10 men and that's going to be difficult. And, you know, there were things that went wrong for us in the game and we did react relatively well to them. You know, coming from behind twice, equalizing twice. So from that point of view, the positives from the game are that, look, the players were at least willing to put in the effort and the fight, and they had a bit of character to come from behind on 2 occasions. We didn't lose. That was good. That was good. That was my post-game tweet. At least we didn't lose. Most people saw it for the sarcastic thing that it was, but as ever on the internet, you know, there are people who are like, oh, what sort of a mentality is that?
Yeah, where's your ambition, man?
Yeah, exactly. You know, we could have closed the gap on Chelsea to 16 points had we won the game.
And well, I think the title's probably gone after today's result.
Yeah,
you know, exactly. I had all my hopes up after the Palace, you know, beat Chelsea, but now I think we can sign it to history.
Yeah.
I mean, we didn't lose. Now, from the highlights that I saw, I felt that maybe we were a little bit lucky to not lose. I felt like David Ospina made a lot of saves. Is that reflective of what you saw in the broader pattern of the game?
He did make a couple of good saves, yes. And City did have, I think, better chances. I think one of their good chances came just after halftime. They had a really, really good chance, I think, if it was the one I remember. Maybe Aguero, perhaps, from a corner, or City went down the right and put in a cross, and Aguero got between Gabriel and Mustafi and headed wide. I think he really planted his header wide instead of trying to glance it. And there was another one where he glanced the header and he had a really good chance to score again, and Ospina made a save. He did make a save from Fernandinho. But we scored him almost immediately after that Aguero miss early in the second half. But after that, we didn't really have a lot to offer from an attacking point of view. There wasn't a lot going on in the final third from an Arsenal point of view. City in the second half, from probably 10 or 15 minutes into the second half till almost the end of the game, dominated possession. They'd so much of the ball. We really didn't look like we could get out of our, you know, our own half for long periods. There were moments of, like, stupidity. There was an Alexis back heel on the edge of the box, which I think drew a save from Ospina, if I can't quite remember at this point. But, you know, we did our best to try and fuck it up. But, certainly City, to me, always looked like a side more likely to score than we were.
I mean, I guess, you know, it's a result that benefits them more. It goes without saying, simply because they're above us in the league. Although, why was it such an odd game, do you think? Was that to do with the atmosphere, to do with the uncertainty that we've talked about for the last few weeks that's kind of enveloping the club at the moment, to do with the discord among the fans? Do you think that all played into it being an odd occasion?
No, you know what, actually, what I thought, you know, clearly I'm watching it from home and watching it on TV and only able to view it from that point of view, but it felt to me, perhaps a bit more than some games in the recent past, that the crowd really tried to get behind the team. They really tried to raise the team. After we conceded, you know, you could expect people to go silent or for things to get a bit like, oh, fuck this shit, not again, blah, blah, blah. Mm. But there was an effort, I think, to try and rouse the team. And throughout, I think the crowd were very much behind the team for the 90 minutes. But it's hard to escape the other stuff that's going on. I just felt like both teams were a bit weird in how they approached the game. I think City were a little more confident in their ability to win the game. Arsenal really knew, they looked like a team that knew they couldn't lose it. You know, that way. They looked like they there was a lot of pressure. Everyone on that pitch was aware of the pressure, and everyone was aware of what they couldn't do. And I don't know exactly. Sometimes you just get a feeling from a game that it's weird and strange and odd and there's something going on, but you can't quite put your finger on what it is. And, you know, you see players do things that they shouldn't do and they probably know better than to do. You know, the second City goal, Ozil gave the ball away, got a bit unlucky, I think, when the ball rebounded away from him. His pass was cut out and, you know, defending was poor. You leave Sergio Aguero. It was a bit like that. Was it, who scored that goal for Liverpool? Was it Mane who scored the second goal for Liverpool, where he was sort of left all alone at the back post?
The far side.
Yeah, you know, and that was there again. And
I mean, Arsene Wenger's spoken about the defending this week, hasn't he? He's kind of cited that as the main issue with our football in the last few weeks. I think that, you know, it's not the only issue, but today, from what I've seen, felt like one of those days where, you know, that kind of played out. I mean, the first goal was kind of, it was a great pass, but it was sort of staggeringly easy how they cut us open, right?
Yeah. I mean, look, Mustafi attacked the ball in I suppose, high up in our half. You know, he went to win the header, and that, as a centre half, is something that, fair enough, he felt like he should do, because, well, look, nobody else was challenging for it, and there'd be, you know, fingers pointing if nobody was challenging for the ball. But what didn't happen when he went there was one of our central midfielders being aware of that and then dropping back in to cover that space. And it was a first-time ball. I think it was De Bruyne. Was it De Bruyne? It was De Bruyne. Yeah. I like, it was a great pass. Again, you're looking at Hector Bellerin and thinking, where is the fast, quick, pacey Hector Bellerin that could have got goal side of Sané a bit quicker?
I think he catches him a year ago. I'm convinced of that.
Me too. Me too.
We've seen it happen so many times. And, you know, we've talked on this show about him potentially carrying an injury problem. I have to think there's something to that, because, you know, Sané's quick, but Bellerin's like a, you know, he's got the club record for sprinting. He's absolutely electric at his quickest. So I was, you know, alarmed by how quickly he
got. I think there's only one way to really find out what the likelihood of Bellerin catching him is. Right?
Go on.
I think we've got to look at Sané's sprint speed in FIFA. All right, Leroy Sané, here he is in FIFA. Okay, what is his pace? Is 91. So that's pretty quick. That is pretty quick.
That is fast.
But
that
Hector fast. Bellerin...
How does it compare to Bellerin?
Okay, Hector Bellerin's speed is 94. So he's 3 faster, and he's got 96 acceleration, and Sané's acceleration is only... Let me get it back here. Is only 92. So he's got 4 more acceleration and 3 more speed. There's no excuse to be outpaced.
He's 7 faster. He's 7 faster.
7
What's going
whole
on?
Things faster. It's pathetic.
I mean, if you can't believe the FIFA attributes, I don't know who to believe anymore, to be honest. Nothing's sacred anymore.
Yes, it's absurd. Absurd. But yeah, you know, it was just one of those things that you're going, look, when you're playing Man City, you're playing at home, you're coming into a game after 1 win in 5 Premier League games, everybody should be switched on, everybody should be aware of what it is they're going to do, and everybody should know that when one of the centre halves goes charging forward to win a header near the halfway line, someone else needs to cover the space that he has vacated. It's not that fucking difficult. It's not complicated in any way. And that wasn't the case. And it just took one pass, and a very good pass, let's be honest. But, you know, it was just it just felt like a really easy goal for Manchester City to score. Really easy.
Yeah, and I mean, look, I don't know how reflective this is of what was actually going on in the game, but I was sort of checking Twitter furiously, and the suggestion was that around that time, you know, City maybe could have capitalised and got one or two more, that Arsenal were having gone behind initially a little on the ropes.
Yeah, maybe so, actually. Let me have a quick look for the on the live blog. Oh, yes, there's an almost 2-0. De Bruyne hits the post, and then it rebounded to Silva, who forced Ospina into a good save. What else is there? Ooh, danger, it says. Ooh, almost for Ozil. No, I don't know what's going on there. Yeah, Alexis wants a penalty. No, that was a tackle from behind in the box, actually. But let's see what else. Then Theo Walcott scored. I mean, John Stones headed wide from a corner. I mean, there wasn't an awful lot of goal mouth action. And then we scored. Scrappy kind of goal through Theo Walcott.
You keep scoring in big games, really, you know, or scoring against big opponents. I think you've got to give him some credit for that. Although I did see a clip as well of him going in with a very potentially dangerous challenge.
Yes.
Was that in the first half too?
Yeah, maybe so. Maybe second half. Let me see if I can find it here.
In a week where we've been talking about, you know, dangerous tackles. I mean, I haven't seen any commentary or reaction to that one, but it looked very dangerous.
I think it was on Silva. Yeah, it was dangerous. It was over the top. He stood on him with his studs. It was not a nice tackle at all, to be perfectly honest. Very on Theo Walcott, you would say, as well. And yeah, look,
he's not that kind of player.
And he did score a goal in a game against big opposition. He scored against Man City earlier in the season as well, if I remember correctly. He scored the opening goal. But, you know, apart from scoring, I'm not sure he did very much else. And that was true of a number of our players. Not that they scored and didn't. No.
Click. I mean, how did the Alexis Welbeck Theo front three work? Because on paper, it's so exciting.
Didn't. For me, it didn't really work at all. Welbeck started the game up front, and in the second half, Alexis moved there, and Welbeck moved to the left-hand side. You know, I like Danny Welbeck, and he worked hard, and he tried hard, but he was not involved from an attacking point of view, really. Very early on, there was a clearance that ricocheted off him and went just wide, and I think it was from that goal kick that City scored. But not in the game, not really threatening at all, to be honest. Walcott wasn't happy when he was taken off. He had a bit of a hump, apparently. He sulked off. And I was sort of expecting Welbeck to come off at that point. Welbeck came off next, I think, for Iwobi. It didn't really work. Alexis had some nice moments. The usual thing with Alexis, where you get these really nice moments and then other moments where you're going, what the hell was that? What are you doing? I saw some
chat about his body language during the game. Was there anything out of the ordinary there, or just his usual demonstrative self?
I didn't notice anything that we haven't seen before.
Fine, yeah. You know? Arsene Wenger was asked about it, but I guess, you know, as his contract approaches this kind of critical point, that's just going to happen more and more.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't notice anything really. But, you know, Mesut Ozil played and he got an assist, obviously, for the second goal from the corner. But there was just, again, a general lack of cohesion in the way that we played. Midfield was fine. As I said, Coquelin and Xhaka were pretty disciplined and did fairly well in the second half. But it wasn't a game that we were ever really in control of, or it wasn't a game that we had long periods where we were on top, where we caused City's defense, which is, to be fair, their weakest link. We didn't really cause them any huge problems at all.
No. I mean, thank you, Gael Clichy, for playing Theo Walcott on side at that crucial point. I think that's appreciated. You can always rely on him to produce a moment like that.
Good old Gael.
But I guess, yeah, it feels like a game in which they were kind of, I mean, this is not a particularly original or interesting thing to say about a draw, but it feels like the positives were balanced out by the negatives. You know, well, we did well to come from behind twice, but we also conceded at two kind of criminal points in the game very early on, and then immediately having equalised. So, you know, there were signs of bits of character, but not so much quality. It was not a goodly game, but not a badly one either. Kind of a weirdly encounter, all in all.
A weirdly encounter. Yeah, I like that explanation. It was, you know, afterwards I saw Danny Welbeck interviewed on Sky, and it was a fairly perfunctory interview. You know, he showed some character. Yes, he showed some character. Tough part of the season, you know, is a point enough? And he, you know, his final comment to Jeff Shreves was like, he said to him, is a point enough? He said, we wanted 3 points. And that was it, you know, because the gap to City is 7 points. That's to fourth place. It's 9 points, I think, or 8 points to Liverpool. It's 11 points to Tottenham with only one game in hand. You know,
yeah, I mean, those other instances we do have, you know, on Liverpool we've got, 2 games in hand, which is something.
Yeah.
But you've got to win those games. that's the worry at the moment.
Well, that's it. I mean, and as well, you know, I look at it in the context of a game against a big team, big opposition, who are good in a decent enough run of form. Man City, I think they've, you know, won 3 and drawn 2 of their last 5. I don't know what else they've done before that, but you know, they're not in bad form, and we have been in terrible form. We haven't been getting results at all. So a draw in that context, you know, it's fine in isolation. In the overall context of the season, it feels like another game that's gone by where we haven't taken as many points as we should have taken or needed to take. You know, this is the problem. Games are running out. I think we've got 10 games left now. And after that, you know, there's some big games coming. Obviously, we've got a game on Wednesday, so that's a chance to do something. But, you know, maybe today was about steadying the ship. Maybe it was about just not losing and maybe taking what little positives we could from the performance.
Maybe. I mean, you know, we've talked in the past about how when Arsenal lose a game, sometimes they need a match to sort of steady the ship and, you know, kind of grind out a draw, what have you. They've lost, what was it, 4 out of the last 5. So the ship was altogether more difficult to steady. And I guess a draw with City in isolation isn't a terrible result. But I think in our predicament, this is a game it felt like we could win. And to be honest, I kind of had a hunch that we would. It just seemed quite typical of us to, you know, struggle and then go and beat a relatively big side at home. But maybe that was unrealistic, I think, given how much discord and how much poor form precedented this
season. Look, I think you can see it right throughout the team that there's something badly wrong or missing, you know? There's something missing from this team, the way they play. This is the same team that went 19 games without losing in the first half of the season. You know, that's the reality of this team, that they're better than they're showing right now. I mean, I'm not saying they're like champions elect or that kind of thing, but I think they are better than what we're seeing right now. And there's just something. You can feel like there's a weight, there's a pressure, whether it's coming from the managerial situation, whether they're all aware of the criticism that they've had themselves as individuals, as a collective, from the fans. As I said, though, I didn't hear anything inside the stadium that wasn't anything other than really supportive, that actually tried to get behind the team and get them to, you know, get them motivated to show that at least, you know, during the 90 minutes, all the fans are behind them all the way. But, you know, there's something wrong. You can't escape. You can't look at them. You can't look at the way they play. You can't look at the things that happen. You can't look at the mistakes that are made. The lack of any fluidity to the football that we're playing, and just not be aware that there's something really wrong. It's like a man going to the doctors and fucking he's got snot and pus coming out of his nose and he's coughing and he's shitting and there's stuff going everywhere and trying to tell you he's fine. It's not, you know, it's not. You can see it. It's not. There's something really wrong. And maybe it is relative to where we are. Maybe it is, you know, the old thing about, well, you know, 75 other teams in the Football League would like to have the problems that Arsenal would have. Sure, fine, I get that. But, you know, we live in our own world and we're experiencing our own footballing reality, and that's what it is. It just looks... I think he said something during the week or before the game about how, you know, he's tried different combinations of things and not all of them have worked or none of them seem to work or whatever it was. And there just seemed to me there to be like an admission of, well, I don't really quite know what else I can do. What can I do here to get things going again?
Yeah, well, I think that's the case. I don't think the manager does know, because if you look at past seasons when we've been in trouble like this and look like we're going to miss out on the top four, he's had to be quite pragmatic or quite drastic in the changes that he's made. And generally, he's ended up kind of stumbling on a formula that was never necessarily his intention. He's had to divorce himself from his original plans. And he's tried to do that this year, but nothing's worked. You know, I think he's tried several different things, but none seem to have clicked as they have done in previous years. And he's running out of options, really. Do you know what I mean? He's running out of possible combinations to try between now and the end of the season. He needs something to click into gear sooner rather than later. But yeah. I'm struggling to find what more he can throw at it, to be honest.
Yeah. What can he do? What can he say that he hasn't already said 100 times or 1,000 times? The only thing that I would take from today, if I was Arsene Wenger and I was those players, I would say, look, you didn't lose. And that's a low bar. I mean, I get that. That's a really low bar. You didn't lose. And we didn't play anywhere near as well as we can play. And that City team is beatable. And we're playing them again in a couple of weeks' time at Wembley in an FA Cup semi-final. And if there's anything to take from that game, I think it's that. Because, to be perfectly honest, I don't think we're going to make the top four. I don't think we're going to make the top four.
Well, I did one of those predictor things where you put in all the results, and I didn't have us making the top four, and I had us beating City.
Right. So, well, actually, we've got a question about that, so we might do that in the...
Okay, cool.
In the second half of the second half of the podcast, we might do that.
But, yeah, I'm not feeling great about that. You know, and that puts a lot of onus on the FA Cup, really. I mean, do you think, is it fair to say the FA Cup, that our season kind of hinges on that now?
Yeah.
It's more than that still, because the top four is still up for grabs, you know? Up for grabs is a strong phrase to use, and one that has particular resonance for Arsenal, I guess.
Yeah. Look, you know, there's 10 games, there's 30 points, and we're only 7 points off Manchester City in fourth, and other teams could go through. So it's like, I'm not saying it's impossible, and we've been here before, and we've done it before. And actually, I was talking to somebody about this the other day. I was playing five-a-side on Friday, and one of the lads said, look, you know, Arsenal will get the top four. That is what Arsenal do. That's what Arsene Wenger does. Simple as that.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, you know, yeah, the conventional wisdom hasn't really worked a number of times in the last year or so. Maybe this is the final horseman of the apocalypse. Arsenal finishing outside the top four. That's it.
I think it is. And I think it's interesting. You know, I had a chat with a Spurs fan the other day. This is prior to the weekend and Spurs winning away from home and Arsenal drawing. We were talking about, oh, are Spurs finally going to finish above Arsenal this year? And I said, you know, it pains me, but I think this is the year. And there was, I could see in the Spurs fan, he was terrified of the prospect. He was like, look, I think, you know, it'll be Arsenal by a point. It'll be Arsenal by a point. You know, that's what happens. I could see him sort of kind of talking himself out of it. So, yeah. You know, there is this expectation born out of history that we will make top four, that we will finish above Spurs. I don't think I'm being pessimistic when I look at that league table and say, I don't really see either of those things happening.
No, I certainly don't see us finishing above Tottenham at this point.
I mean, it would take something so extraordinary. It would only Tottenham could produce it. Really, it would be a collapse of, you know, unheard of proportions. But
Tottenham proportions.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It would. But, I mean, yeah, that is maybe the only thing we can hold on to in that regard, because, as you know,
they're still Tottenham. I guess
they are still Tottenham, and they have that within them as much as we have what we do within ourselves. So maybe that's what it is. But, you know, look, the thing is, we have to start winning games again. We don't look like a team that's capable of doing that just at the moment. But maybe what happened against Man City will just steady things down and take some of the pressure off. And then we've got West Ham on Wednesday, and maybe that will be the win that we need to kick us off again. But
it ought to be. Right. I mean, you know, I feel scared saying that because, you know, you can't take anything for granted with Arsenal at the moment. But West Ham are in 14th position. Mm. We're at home. Generally, we do well in these games. We've got a good record in London derbies. You'd have to think that finally we get a win there.
Yeah.
Maybe in the light of that, this point against City will, you know, be seen as something potentially got a bit of a turning point.
Wow. A turning point with 9 games left. Yes. Well, look, we'll see some of the fixtures that are on in midweek. Manchester United play Everton on Tuesday. I'm looking at stuff that's more or less around us. And then on Wednesday, Arsenal against West Ham. Chelsea against Manchester City. Ooh, that's quite interesting. Liverpool play Bournemouth. And Tottenham play Swansea. So,
I mean, you'd fancy Liverpool and Spurs to win their games.
Yeah.
Man United Everton is interesting because United, West Brom, having comprehensively beaten us in the last round of fixtures, I guess did us a bit of a favour at Old Trafford, getting a draw there.
Yeah.
And really upsetting Jose Mourinho. I mean, I don't like to see Tony Pulis happy, but, you know, there are some cases where I can just about stomach it if I see Mourinho upset.
Yeah.
So, you know, United need to win that game. And then, yeah, I mean, look, I need Chelsea to start winning games. It's only 7 points, that gap between Chelsea and Spurs now. I feel sick even thinking about, you know, if they blew it. It doesn't bear thinking about.
Yeah, but look, we just talked about Tottenham blowing it. We can't then, you know, you can't hang on to that thread of hope and then think that Tottenham might do the other thing.
Don't say it.
I didn't say
Don't
it.
Say it.
I didn't say it. I didn't say it. All right, look, we're going to take a break. We'll come back with questions and more in part two right after this.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog. Welcome back to the Arscast Extra. This is part two where we answer the questions you sent to us on Twitter at Gunnarblog and at Arsblog, but not this week on the Arsblog Facebook page because I forgot. So sorry. Sorry to all the people on Facebook. I apologize. Won't happen again. You may.
We do love you, really.
We do. Lots. You can chastise me as you will. Perhaps call me names the way people do. But anyway, look, let's move past it. Let's move beyond it. It was a simple, honest mistake. Don't want to crucify me. Jesus.
I look, if people on Facebook are anything, they are understanding and patient. So I can't see what could possibly
go
wrong.
Absolutely. You're right, James. You're right. Okay, well, look, we're going to do some questions and you're going to go first.
Okay, well, look, I'm going to ask you a question because I don't understand the question, but I sense that that's because I've been busy all day, not just because I'm stupid. So this is Brad Dennett on Twitter, of course. He may be on Facebook, but that's not where he saw the question. And he says, do you think Gazidis' comments highlight a potential fallout between himself and Wenger? And at this stage, I will confess, I don't know what these comments are, so please enlighten me.
Okay, well, I don't know exactly what the comments are, but I do know that he had a meeting with the Arsenal Fans Forum that Tim Stillman was talking about on the Arscast on Friday. You know, the way they talk about fan issues and all that kind of stuff. What I was told was that the whole thing was pretty much as you would expect from Ivan Gazidis, in the sense that, you know, defensive, corporate, good political kind of stuff, you know, that way where he says a lot and doesn't really answer the questions.
Absolutely.
However, he used the phrase catalyst of change. This is what I was told. The catalyst of change. Apparently, whatever decision is going to be made about Arsene Wenger, it will be mutual. This is what he was saying. It's definitely like 100%. I'm not lying. I promise. Like, seriously, I promise you 100%. Like, you could cross my heart, hope to die, stick a needle in my eye. It's going to be mutual. Like, seriously, 100%. Like, totally. There's no chance of it not being mutual or just Arsene Wenger's decision. So this is what was being put across there, which, you know, if you ask me, is a big load of bollocks. I don't believe that for a fucking second. Like, I don't believe it's mutual in any way. I still think that, you know, it's going to end up with with Arsene Wenger making the decision. But this thing, this catalyst of change, is the new thing that's coming out of the Arsenal boardroom, a catalyst of change. What does that mean?
But what is the catalyst of change?
What
is Ivan himself the catalyst of change?
I don't know. I'm reading something here now from Jeremy Wilson. And in his article in The Telegraph, he says, Wenger wants to go on and has told the club that he is ready to reinvent, in inverted commas, reinvent himself, and Arsenal believe that the 67-year-old is capable of becoming what Gazidis has called a catalyst for change.
It sounds like a film title.
Yeah, Catalyst for Change, starring... Who would it star? Catalyst for...
Arsene Wenger, too. Catalyst for Change.
But it would be somebody, like, really... Like, who is that fucking fat martial arts guy? You know, that fat guy?
Who's the... How can you be a fat martial artist?
Steve Dunholm, or whatever his fucking name. I don't know what his name is. I've had too
Charlie
much...
Charlie Adam.
No, not Charlie Adam. Not like Dolph Lundgren. The kind of weird, strange martial arts fucking... Like, he's not like...
Steve Seagal?
Steven Seagal, that's the fella. The
yes.
Fat guy, see? And you see, I'm
Steven
right.
Seagal.
Steven Seagal. Catalyst for
exactly.
Change!
Half man, half seagull.
He'll steal your ice cream without you even knowing. but yeah, I mean, what does it mean? Here's what I think it means. Nothing. I think it's a sound bite that means essentially nothing. I think the board saying that it's going to be a mutual decision is just them trying to make out like they have any influence over what happens. You know, apparently the contract is not on offer at the moment. This is what he said at this supporters forum meeting, that the contract is not on offer. But the decision will be, and I just want to stress this again, no lies. It's going to be mutual. It's a mutual decision.
I mean, it's a bizarre situation. I mean, do you... I mean, I'm just thinking back to the international break and before the international break and how, you know, all the reports and every commentator and pundit was saying, well, there'll be an announcement during the international break. They'll want to provide some clarity then. Arsene Wenger's gone away to think about it. The club know what they want to do. And yet, the wait goes on. I feel like the tide is... I feel like the pieces are moving. I feel like there's much more noise about Arsene Wenger staying than there was even a few weeks ago.
Mm.
And yet the club are kind of sending out this odd mixed messages. Do you think that's literally just an attempt by Ivan Gazidis to make it seem as if there is some kind of accountability for the results between now and the end of the season, whereas in fact the decision has pretty much already been taken?
I don't fucking know. You know, I just don't fucking know anymore. It's like Arsenal, the board and the manager are playing a game of, like, whose line is it anyway? It's like football improv. What will
Can we make these poor podcast presenters go insane before May?
Exactly. Or, you know, and even, like, without making a joke about it, it's driving people fucking mad. We've spoken about this before. Like, you know, there were people fighting in the ground today. Like, literally, physically fighting in the ground today. We have a question here, which comes from Arsenal's Voice, who says, I was at the Emirates today, witnessed one physical fight and two incidents where, if people weren't holding them back, it would have got physical. How insane is the infighting? Do you think Wenger confirming his decision would lead to the fighting stopping, or is it too late? And he said, if you could sit the Arsenal fans who fight each other down in a room, what would you say to them? You know, I wouldn't fucking say anything. I'd just fill the room with water. What the fuck are you doing, you fucking idiots? But that's what's happening. People are being driven to physical, to feel like somehow fighting somebody else because they have a difference of opinion or whatever it is somehow justified because of how strongly you feel about what the hell is going to go on with the manager or the club. You know, that's insane. Arsenal have to be aware of this. I'm not, like, excusing or condoning people fighting each other. It's idiotic. It's just beyond stupid. It's pathetic. These are you're grown-ups. What the fuck are you doing? You've got... just use your head. But... this is the whole situation is feeding into that. I mean, I don't know if you've seen the clip, but like a guy going after Robbie from Arsenal Fan TV. And, you know, I get how some people might not like the stuff that Arsenal Fan TV do. I get it. But just don't watch it then. There's no call to, like, move into the realms of physicality, of threatening people, of violence, of throwing punches or pushing and shoving. You know, it's just, it's mad. And all the while, what the fuck is happening? Arsene Wenger is saying, well, I know what I want to do. The board are saying, well, you know, it will be a mutual decision that could be a catalyst for change. And Stan Kroenke's sitting thousands of miles away going, well, fuck, thank God nobody's talking about me, really. They're all pointing fingers at this fucking French guy who's got the fucking whatever else you might think about Arsene Wenger. What a massive set of fucking balls that guy has. He really does. He's like, fuck it. I'll just say what I want. I don't know. Did you watch his press conference last week? The one on Friday. Did you watch that?
Bits and pieces, not the whole thing.
Right. He was having fun with it. He was having a great...
Oh, he was in a great mood, yeah.
He was like, nah, I'm not answering that. And James Ollie from the Evening Standard was going, but why are you waiting? You know, what are you waiting for? And he says, well, maybe one day if you ask me, I'll answer. And it's like, well, come on. What the fuck is this? What is happening that this has been allowed to develop the way it has? That they're just basically making shit up as they go along, week after week after week. And the consequences of that, to my mind, are evident in the way that we play and what's happening on the pitch. And people are going out of their fucking minds. They're losing whatever little bit of reason that they had. And nothing is happening. They're still going, well, mutual catalyst, you know.
Well, they're coming out with all that business speak. Well, meanwhile, Arsene Wenger's allowed to say pretty much whatever he wants, seemingly without consequence. You can just kind of go, I know and you don't, na 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 na. And everyone just has to put up with it.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess that is his right, but you'd think that somebody at the club would, you know, have the wisdom to say, well, maybe that's not a great thing. Maybe the fans aren't going to love that.
Yeah, you know, this is probably just on a very normal human level, not the right way to treat people who are paying thousands and thousands of euros every season for season tickets or corporate hospitality, or people who follow the club from all over the world, who pay their money to watch their fucking team, who buy the merchandise, who do whatever they can to feel connected to their club. You know, maybe you owe them a little bit better than this. Maybe, you know.
People who already feel like they're being alienated and kept out of the loop and not communicated with, to be told, well, we kind of know what we're going to do, but we don't really feel the need to tell you yet. I mean, it's just unbelievable. And I think everyone's accountable for their own actions. And I think the people who are being violent at the ground should be ashamed of themselves. And I think that, you know, they have to be responsible for that. But the club has also a responsibility to act in a way that is just sensible. And I just think they're fanning the flames with their behaviour.
Absolutely.
And I think, I don't think that absolves someone who's violent of guilt. I don't think that at all.
No.
But I just think an institution like Arsenal, one that is supposedly renowned for doing things in the right way, frankly should know better than to present the kind of shambles of communication and PR and everything else that we've seen in the last couple of months.
Absolutely. This is Arsene Wenger talks a lot, doesn't he, about how, you know, when he arrived, it was a much smaller club, and now there's 600-700 staff and, you know, all that kind of stuff. Well, you know, is there one person among that 600?
Quantity doesn't necessarily reflect quality.
No, exactly. But surely, is there just one person who could say, you know what, it would be a good idea if we had a clear and concise plan for the future and we communicated that to people in order for them to feel at least like they know what's happening. Like, they might not like it. If Arsene Wenger came out tomorrow and said, I'm staying for another 2 years, stick it up your bums. Well, look, people might not like it, but at least there's that clarity. At least that's there. I'm not saying that's what I want, but if that was to happen, you could say, well, you know, fair enough. They've got the message. They presented the message. We don't necessarily like the message, but it is what it is. And we're going to have to deal with that in whatever way we see fit. But it's the uncertainty. It's the not knowing. It's the teasing. It's almost like being teased. by... It's just...
It's perverse.
Fucking
it's so
bananas.
For a you know, for your own supporters. It is a bizarre way to treat them. And I think also the naivety of thinking, well, once we beat West Ham, this news will suddenly become palatable. Do you know what I mean? Like, that they're just waiting for it. If we can collect 6 points, you know, then suddenly we'll be able to sneak all this past them and they won't even have noticed what's gone on.
Yeah.
I mean, it's patronising in the extreme. And it's... I still think that there's a fundamental... I think at Arsenal, I don't know this is a fact, but my perception is that they still kind of think that the problem isn't as big as it is. You know, I think that they still think that the fans who are disgruntled or upset, not just with the manager, but with the way the club is being run more generally, are a minority.
The vocal minority.
Think, yeah, a vocal minority or an extreme minority. And I just think that absolutely isn't the case now. And I know I can only really report on that anecdotally, but... You know, that's the way I see it. And I think that they're making enemies of their own fans at times. And that is a shame. And Arsene Wenger's very keen to talk about all these people who work for the club now and all the advances that have been made over the past two decades. And in some respects, that is true. But in other ways, you know, certain things about the club have gone sour.
Yeah.
And it's a really... Yeah.
It's just
a crap time to be an Arsenal fan. Really.
It is a bit. And look, we know that the club are actually very good at monitoring what's said on social media and on Facebook and maybe on podcasts. I don't know if they listen to the fucking podcast. If there's someone who is listening, to just fucking tell us what's happening. For fuck's sake, just tell us what's going on. Because this is like, I don't have words for it anymore. I just, you know, it's fucking bananas. It's stupid. And it is the consequences of it. Are not just something to be laughed about. That's the point that I want to make here. That when fans, and again, you know, we'll make the point, it's not fucking the right thing to do, but when people are driven to the point of assaulting each other inside the fucking stadium, where there's, when there's a game of football going on, that tells you that there's something really, really wrong. Not just with a vocal minority, not just with one or two who are who've got banners or vans or planes or whatever the fuck. It's not. It's gone beyond that now, well beyond that. And it's a dereliction of duty by not doing something about it or by not addressing it in a serious way. Because until now, they have not addressed it in a serious way. Arsene Wenger will do his post-match interviews, he'll do his press conferences, he'll say what he has to say, and even with the best efforts of journalists who try and press him on it, they don't get anywhere. But as a club, from the board down, nothing has been done to take this issue seriously.
No. And if Ivan Gazidis really is, I mean, I wasn't there, but if he really is saying, well, there could be a catalyst for change, you know, nothing set in stone, the contract is not on offer, why would you fan those flames of that possibility of change if you know that's not what's going to happen? I mean, it's a dangerous game to play because you are letting people feel fundamentally, it goes back to the same thing about the manager is ultimately accountable to the fans. You're making people feel that they have an ability to influence things, and that leads directly to some of the behaviour that we're seeing from supporters.
Yeah,
so,
And you know what it is as well? I think, you know, people feel so disconnected from Arsenal. I was watching that Rocky and Ridey documentary and, you know, it was quite emotional at times. I felt real sorrow, obviously, at what had happened to David Rowcastle, but hearing Ian Wright talk about it and seeing the clips of Arsenal and seeing the clips of Ian Wright talking and David Rowcastle talking, you know, your heart kind of, you feel proud that you support a club like Arsenal. Ian Wright was talking about when he came from Crystal Palace and how he the night that the deal went through, because himself and Rocky had been such friends, they sat up in his kitchen and they were talking till 4 a.m. just about what it was like to play at Arsenal, what it was going to be like to play with Tony Adams and Anders Limpar and to who all the players were. And then they showed, you know, pictures of the facade of Highbury, and they showed the Art Deco outside and the marble halls and the everything, and you're going, oh my god, this is such an amazing football club. I'm so glad I'm an Arsenal fan, because it there is something special about it. And yes, there's a touch of rose tinted glasses and everything else, but now people feel so disconnected from it. And it's different. Of course it's different. It's a business. It's a massive corporation now. That's the way that football has gone. But people could still feel more connected than they are. And when the board of the football club completely and utterly ignore the fans, the way that this board have done over the last, I don't know how long, it's no wonder that the only way that they can feel some sort of connection is through kicking up a fuss to show that they still care and they still have feelings for the football club. Because for all the people, that are up front and center, either talking about it, writing about it, on podcasts, there are many more who don't have any outlet or who don't want an outlet to talk about how disenfranchised they are, and they will just stop. They will just stop going to the ground, James. They'll give up their season ticket and something that has been a big part of their life for who knows how many years, 20 years, 30 years, more than that, will be gone. And that's because of the actions of this board.
That's absolutely right. And I think that, you know, everyone, there's a lot of chat at the moment about how should fans express their views publicly? How should they protest? How should they get their message across? And what you touched on there is that not every fan wants to do that. And it is not incumbent on every fan to do that. Some fans just want to pay for their ticket, turn up, support the team, and feel like they are part of something.
Mm.
And I think that as that feeling part of something erodes, people will just walk away. And the idea that you know, that everyone's got to jump on YouTube and you know, do something about it is a nonsense. There's a huge amount of people who don't have profile, who don't have a podcast, who aren't on Arsenal Fan T, who aren't even on Twitter, who feel as disenfranchised as anybody else.
Yeah.
And I guess, you know, that's reflected in when we see games and, you know, they're not full. And it'll be fascinating to see what happens with the season ticket situation this summer. I mean, you know, there's talk of a waiting list and no one's quite clear on how long that is, but I'm sure, you know, anecdotally, I'm hearing a lot of people saying that they won't be renewing, and I believe them, to be honest.
I see it, you know. So we'll see. We'll wait and see if they've got anything to say, or, you know, over the next week, or whether they'll just go to the West Ham game and, you know, wait and play it by ear. And if that goes well, maybe they might feel they might deign to give us some information or deign to show some leadership. But, you know, I'm not going to hold my breath.
Well, okay. Let's have another question. I mean, I enjoyed this one. So we mentioned Arsenal Fan TV. Rohith Jyothish on Twitter says, do you support the anti-Arsenal Fan TV being launched by Arsenal Football Club? Will it set a bad precedent in terms of diluting the fans' voice? Now, I feel for Rohith because he's been taken in by what I must describe as a masterful April Fools from your good self.
Yeah, that was... I think, you know, normally the April Fools that we do on Arseblog News, we tend to keep them more or less within the realms of reality. You've got to have something like that to make it believable in any way. And then as the story goes on, they tend to get a bit more ridiculous, so people understand that it's just an April Fool's joke. But this one in particular this year seemed to, I guess, maybe tap into the way people think about the club. So we did want to say that Arsenal were going to, maybe I can get the story up here. They were going to launch a rival to Arsenal Fan TV, and we, you know, did a fake letter to show that somebody had been invited to auditions. You know, the idea was that the person should prepare two pieces for camera, and the pieces should be one to react after a good win, and the other one should be a way of finding something positive to say after we lose. And I figured, well, at that point, people will be, you know, they'll figure it out. But some of the other stuff, some of the features that we said that they were going to do on this particular channel, player ratings, where players would be rated, you know, from 1 to 10 hugs. So even if you played shit, you'd still get a hug. and then, of course, like words like defeat and loss will not be used. Because they affect people's perception of what actually happened. So the term three-point robbery and almost victory would be applied, and a draw is called a half win. And then other features like Remember Saurus, where Gunnar Saurus creates classic goals, and Can You Lob Your Semen? which is when fans try and chip the ball over the former goalkeeper. So, yeah, look.
I mean, maybe I'm alone in this, but I would love to watch this YouTube channel.
yeah, can you lob your semen over Gunnosaurus? yeah, look, it wouldn't surprise you. It just wouldn't surprise you in any way, but no, it was absolutely an April Fool. So apologies for that.
Yes, apologies, Roth. You've been taken in.
Yes.
But you know, anything could happen, guys. Maybe that YouTube channel will be the catalyst for change we're all waiting for.
Yes, absolutely. Okay, here's a question from Danny, who is at the _GFP. Who also is one of the guys on the Burkhardt Wonderland podcast. So hello to all you guys over there. He says, Theo was having a great game. He was focused and up for it, but Wenger took him off. Theo was furious. Why does Wenger do this?
To fuck with you, Danny. It's to fuck with you.
Absolutely, man. That's it.
Yeah, they're enjoying that at the moment as a club. I don't know. I mean, from what you said, Theo Walcott, despite scoring, didn't have a great
game. I didn't think he was that great. But you know, maybe again, it's perception, isn't it? You know, people have different ways of viewing these things. But no, I didn't think he was that great. But I was very surprised by Walcott's reaction, because he's not normally that guy, is he? He's not that kind of substituted player. You know, the tackle that he put in as well on Silva. You know,
I think Theo Walcott, maybe he recognises that he owes his career to Arsene Wenger more than most. I mean, I think Wenger's been incredibly patient with him, you know, for the most part, especially through all the injury problems. So maybe he has been a little bit more up for it than some other players in recent times. But I don't think Arsene Wenger substituting a wide player is anything new. If you look back over his career, that's what he does, right? 70 minutes, take a winger off. That's what happens.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much it. I mean, Walcott made 9 passes in the 60-odd minutes that he was on. You know, he did score a goal, but there was a touch of good fortune about it. You know, I don't think, I mean, I'm not picking on Walcott here. I don't think anybody played particularly well, to be honest. But yeah, maybe there's something to that. Maybe Walcott throwing a strop when he comes up. Maybe that's the fifth horseman of the apocalypse. How many horsemen of the apocalypse can there be?
It's going to be a whole. I was going to say herd of horses. Is that what it is? A herd of horses?
I think it's a flock.
Yes, that's it. A shoal. A school. Okay.
A school of horses, yeah.
A murder of horses. Let's have another question. Mitchell Ross. I mean, I don't know if Mitchell's just grumpy today. He says, all this talk on Henri Vieira coming in to learn under Wenger. Anyone else think this is a shit idea?
I mean, that was actually something I meant to touch on in the previous bit when we were talking about Arsene Wenger, was all this talk that perhaps, I mean, there are whispers that players like Vieira and Bergkamp are being approached to come back in, and this could very well tie in with Arsene Wenger being ready to reinvent himself and become the catalyst for change. So maybe that's part of what that is, you know, to bring Vieira back, to bring Bergkamp back in as a coach. Maybe that's what the delay is. Maybe that's what they're waiting for. You know, they've got to find an agreement with Ajax. They've got to convince Vieira to come back from New York City, where he's the manager. Here's the path to your position as Arsenal manager, Patrick. You just got to be Arsene's assistant. But we've got to also fire Steve Bould. Yeah, it's a little bit sensitive. You know, we can't. Yeah. You know, so maybe that's what it is. I don't know. But, I mean, I think any efforts to try and modernize the setup of the club in terms of bringing in new coaches, bringing in director of football, blah, blah, blah. If there's some effort being made in that regard, I'm kind of for it. I'm for it.
I know what you mean. Yeah, look, I love Patrick Vieira. I've got to say, I really love Patrick. I loved him as a player. It does hurt me somewhat that he came back to England with Manchester City and ended up staying there. I would love to see him back at the club in pretty much any capacity. I mean, you know, if he wants a job as chief exec, I mean, that'd be great, because I wouldn't mind seeing some turnover there. But I think, yeah, look, it's possible. Do you think it's just like PR from the club, though? Like, would Arsene Wenger actually grant these people the freedom to change stuff and help evolve things? Or do you think his autonomous manner would prevent that happening?
I don't know. I mean, I think at the very least, there must be some awareness that something has to change. If Arsene Wenger is going to stay, you can't sell 2 more years of Arsene Wenger to people just on 2 more years of Arsene Wenger. Whereas if you say, we've got 2 more years of Arsene Wenger, along with Dennis Bergkamp coming in to be one of our coaches, along with Patrick Vieira coming in as assistant manager or assistant assistant manager, you know, that would go some way to make people feel at least like there's something going on. I'm not saying it would make everyone feel better or like placate people who feel very strongly about the matter, but at least it would show some awareness that it can't be just the same guys doing the same coaching sessions to the same players, because look where we are. We're in the same position or worse off than we were last year. Actually, someone sent a tweet saying we've exactly the same amount of points at this point of the season than we did last year. I found that
as if we're a club locked in some kind of stasis.
I'm finding that a bit hard to believe. What is that real? What's the league table at this moment in time? Let me just check this out.
If that's true, then that just tells you how far off the pace so many other teams fell last season, because it never felt like we were in this much trouble. You know, we were close-ish to Leicester.
Yeah, okay, so after 28 games, we have won 15, drawn 6, and lost 7. So that's after 28 games. So let me go back to last season and go to match after... Did I say 28 games?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, 28 games. Here we go. Jesus, 50. Yeah. Played 28, won 15, drawn 6, lost 7, 51 points.
No.
Yeah, and we were just 6 points off Leicester. But of course, the thing about last season was everyone else was doing much worse.
Yeah, that's
Tottenham. Tottenham were ahead of us, but only 3 points ahead of us. Manchester City were 4 points behind. Manchester United were 4 points behind. Chelsea were 12 points behind, all the way down in 10th.
I mean, the obvious conclusion is that we're not dramatically worse than we were last season. It's just that a lot of teams
are better
to us. Yeah, are a lot better than they were. They've improved. They've evolved, they've moved forward, they've changed, and we have stayed very much the same and are suffering. Because last season was kind of a freak, I think, really. You know, the fact that Leicester won the league tells you a lot of the big clubs just weren't really at it.
Yeah, for sure. So, to answer the question, is it a thing... What was the question?
Is it a shit idea, Henry and
Is
Vieira,
it a shit idea? Well, Henry might be. Maybe Vieira won't be. Bergkamp... I would have Dennis Bergkamp back to do whatever the hell he liked. He could, like, pick his own job. I don't really care. He could just come back and, like, whatever. He could still play. If he wanted to come back and play, I'd let him do that.
Yeah.
You know? But, you know, there has to be. If that's what it is, again, this comes back to the clarity in the club being open with people and telling people what's going on. So it might well be. It would explain... to some extent why there's been a delay. If the announcement is dependent on other things, if the Arsene Wenger announcement is dependent on other things, but the real reason why the Arsene Wenger announcement is dependent on anything at all is results, right? If Arsenal were riding high in the league right now, they'd announce Arsene Wenger regardless of whether it was Patrick Vieira, Dennis Bergkamp, Thierry Henry, Robert Pires, Freddie Ljungberg, whoever the hell else, you know? They would just be completely and utterly a thing on its own. But now they need something else to make it happen. So there you go. That's what I think.
Hey, yay, yay. I've just realised, remember, we promised we'd do some predictions. Yeah. We should get around to those.
We should, yeah. Because, we need to wrap this up. But anyway, okay, this is from Rosser Gunnar, who's Rosser _Gunnar. And he says, can you please do our results predictions like you did last season at the same time? You had us below Spurs. I think that's the way we ended up last season. We predicted that we would finish below Spurs. So there are two fixtures that we'll put at the end that we don't quite know when they're going to happen yet. One is Southampton and one is Sunderland that have been rearranged because of... because of FA Cup involvement. But yeah. Let's do it. So I'll keep this thing. I'm going to do it on a post-it, and I will keep the post-it on the desk in front of me so we can always refer back to it. So starting with the game on Wednesday night against West Ham.
So I think we'll win that game. I think we'll win that game.
Yeah.
I said as much in the first half. Yeah, I think that's an Arsenal win.
Okay, I agree. I think we'll win.
So 3 points from me.
3 points from both of us on that one. Crystal Palace away.
I also think we'll win, although, they're one of those kind of Stokey West Bromy teams now where, they worry me a little bit.
Sam Allardyce, isn't it? They just beat Chelsea.
They just beat Chelsea. But I think I'm going to be an optimist, guys. I'm going to say we're going to win that one.
Yeah, narrow win for me on that one. Narrow win. Exactly. We then face Middlesbrough away.
I think we should win that game. I don't think Middlesbrough are any great shakes. 23 points, 5 adrift in the relegation zone. I've gone for 3 consecutive wins. I mean, people are going to be flabbergasted at home.
Crazy. But I also am going for... Yeah, I'm coming with you on that one. I'm going for a win. Middlesbrough can't score goals, and I think even though we'll probably gift them a goal or two, I think we'll win that one. Okay. So we've got an FA Cup semi-final on Sunday after that Middlesbrough game, which is on a Monday night. Boo, 2 Monday night games, actually, Crystal Palace and Middlesbrough. But then we've got a Wednesday game against Leicester City.
Yeah, the Emirates Stadium. Hey. I mean, Leicester have turned things around, haven't they? I mean, they're suddenly picking up points all over the place. Climbing up the table into 13th now. But at the Emirates Stadium, off the back of 3 consecutive wins, the momentum going, they've confirmed Vieira's coming back, Bergkamp's coming back. Kaba Diawara's the new director of football. I think another Arsenal win.
Right, I'm not as confident.
I can't believe this. I mean, this isn't going to happen, is it? But anyway.
I'm going for a draw in that one.
Okay.
For a draw in that one. And then the following Sunday at 4:30, what a great time for a North London derby at White Hart Lane. That's, what could go wrong there when people have been drinking all day long?
That's a hard one to call.
No, I don't think so. Although, no, hang on. I'm looking at it through the prism of the current situation where, in fairness, things have been a bit grim. Who knows?
I mean, on 10 points from 12 games. Anything could change. I think, I'm going to say draw because I think that'll be good enough for Spurs, to be honest. If they can keep us at arm's length, I think they'll be happy with that. So I think we might get a point there. No? Not feeling it?
I'm not feeling it, but you know what, though? I'm going to predict a win.
Wow.
I'm going to predict a win there. I just feel like somebody is going to do something to make us feel all right.
Okay.
Maybe it's the wine.
Yeah.
It's the wine. Manchester United at home.
A draw for me.
Draw.
I just think Mourinho will just, box himself in and get a point. What about you?
I think we're going to lose. Think we're going to lose that one, to be honest, just because it's Mourinho, and that's tends to be what happens. Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen it before. Then it's away to Stoke.
We're going to win.
Do you really think so?
Yeah.
I think we'll lose that
Law of averages. Law of averages.
Okay. Yeah, eventually.
Science is on my side here, James, yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to go with a loss for Arsenal in that one.
Okay.
Seen us play Stoke before.
And then the final game of the season is Everton at home.
Yes, in the Intertoto Cup playoff or something.
The battle for the Europa League. Who will be the catalyst for change?
Yeah. I'm going to say Arsenal win. I think Everton will be cooked by then.
All right.
Probably Lukaku will have stopped playing because they'll know he's going and all sorts.
I'm going to go for a draw in that one. I'm going to go for a draw.
Okay, now there are 2 more games, aren't there?
Yeah, there are. There's Southampton away.
I mean, that feels like a match we might lose. I'm going to say a draw.
A draw. I'm going to go for a win there. Definitely the wine.
Yeah.
And then Sunderland. Sunderland.
Where's that?
It is at home. It's at home because we already beat them at the Stadium of Light, if you remember. Olivier Giroud
came off the bench.
Yeah.
I think that's got to be a win.
Yeah, it has to be a win. So, remarkably, I have us down as 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 wins, 2 draws and a defeat. And
so
you have
23 points.
You have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 wins, 3 draws and a defeat.
So you have us on 23 and I have us on 21.
Mm. Okay.
From an available
30.
That would, I mean, you know, are we being very optimistic there?
Mm-hmm. Yes. I think we are. I think, how many ciders have you had?
Oh, just one, but I'm very tired, I'll confess. That would take us to...
Is it a gigantic cider? Like
it is quite...
A yard of
magnum.
Cider.
It's a magnum,
magnum of cider.
I think that, and that would take us above 70 points.
Mm. Which should be, under normal circumstances...
It generally is enough for the top four, but it has happened. Spurs, I think, missed out with over 70 points once.
Let's see. Last year's table... Yeah, fourth place.
We realised that last year's table isn't worth the paper it's written on, frankly.
Okay, so that would give, if my predictions came true, we would have 74 points and you would have 72 points. So last year we're counting out 2014-15, 70 points got you to fourth place. 2013-14, oh no, you would be out of it. 79 points, and we were in fourth on 79 points. What we give for... 79 points right now. 2012-13, 73 points. So I'd get us in and you'd see us out. And 2011-12, that's the last one I'm going to do. 69 points got Tottenham into fourth place. So...
I mean, basically what we're learning is for it to happen, we need about 20 points from the last 30 available.
Minimum,
yeah.
I think, yeah.
And that's with other people slipping up.
Mm. Okay, two very final quick questions. This one comes from SamCon994, and he wants to know, what are your thoughts on James trying to relive his teenage years with that ear stud? Like the Gazidis thing, I don't know what this is.
That was another April Fool's, I'm afraid. I put an Instagram of me with a lovely diamond in my ear, and it was false. I just did it. I bought it. It's magnetic, actually. I bought it as a prop for a thing, and I just wanted to scare my relatives. And let me tell you, it worked.
Why would they be scared?
Because I think they felt I'd made a terrible life choice.
But have you never had your
no, never.
Pierced?
Never, ever, nothing on my body. I would do, actually. I quite liked it, but I'm not sure that everyone else felt it suited me.
Right. Yeah, I had my ear pierced when I was a younger man.
Just one?
Just one, yeah. Just my left ear.
That yeah, that's the one.
Mm.
I'd consider it. Did it hurt?
Did it hurt? No. No, I don't think so. It was, like, done by a dude with a gun thing. It wasn't something I did myself.
Just like not in prison or something.
Yeah, a packet of peas and just didn't do that. No, it didn't hurt. Didn't hurt. But, you know, there comes a point where, you know.
Has it closed up now?
I think so. It probably has. Although the hole is still...
You wouldn't like to try and find out.
Well, you know what I might do? What I'll try and do, James, is before the next Arscast Extra, I will buy an earring. And I will see if I can force the earring through the hole.
And I'd actually like you to do that on air if you can.
Okay.
I mean, this could be dangerous. Is this this is the wine again, I think, you consenting to this?
Yeah, it could well be. Could well be. But hey, look, I've said it now, so I'm going to have to gonna have
Stick
to do it.
It. Yeah. Okay. All right.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Final question is from The Stude, who's at Zap83. Like Zap Brannigan, I wonder?
Possibly.
Alert the men. He says, maybe I should we read this in Zap Brannigan's voice? Because
yeah,
that would
go
be
ahead.
Okay. Let me try this. All right, he says, after Arsene Wenger's furious bottle throwing, what would your ideal item to throw in a moment of Arsenal-induced frustration? Is that any good?
Yeah, it's pretty good, actually. It was like he was here on the show.
In the room.
I think, in the room, I would throw, I mean, it's tempting to say grenade, isn't it? I mean, that's the one that would have most impact.
Well, he says, the stude says, mine would be an egg, raw or cooked. Now, I've got an issue with that.
Is it a hygiene issue?
Not really.
Is it a salmonella issue?
No, I mean, I just think that, like, if it was cooked, it wouldn't be a true representation of your frustration, would it? Like, I'm very frustrated. I must get one of these cooked eggs that I brought with me specifically for this purpose.
So the thing is, it would scare me because I don't like boiled eggs. I don't trust the consistency or the way they move.
You don't like boiled?
Yep. And in fact, I dislike them so much that for April Fool's, my girlfriend put some boiled eggs in my bed.
In your bed? Were they shelled?
Yeah.
Right.
She soiled my sheets with some boiled eggs.
It could be worse, but... wow, okay.
Yeah, yeah. So that would be... If you were going to use a missile against me... I mean, I'm opening myself up to all sorts of problems here because people are going to be chucking eggs at me in the street every time I walk around Highbury. But, yeah, that would really... I mean, that would... Phew, that would put the willies up here.
Do you not like to eat boiled eggs?
No. I went for a ramen the other day and there was just a boiled egg just like...
Yeah, that's good. That's a really nice
sat
part
in the soup.
Of it. Yeah.
Why was there an egg in the soup? I was furious about it. I took the egg out of the soup. I gave it to my friend. He ended up with two eggs in his soup. If you should go for a ramen with me, you get two eggs in your soup because I'm not having it.
Right. I like boiled eggs. I don't like when the yolk is cooked all the way through. I think that's disgusting.
Sure.
Like, cooked egg yolk is bleh. It's got to be runny. That's the whole point. It's where you get all
I like
this.
Scrambled eggs.
Yeah.
I like fried eggs. I'm not eating a boiled egg. It's mental.
Right. Okay. Fine. Look, to each their own. To each their own.
So, I don't think his egg-throwing idea is that bad.
Right. But what would you throw?
I would throw... I don't know. Who am I throwing it at again?
Well, Arsene Wenger throws a bottle of water down. He's like, ding, and the bottle
That's
of water...
That's what he's got access to, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. It's got to be access. So what would you throw? Like Steve Bold?
Yeah.
Just pick up Steve Bold and like... haul him
across. Yeah, Santi Cazorla. I think you'd get a greater distance, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
If you gave him a good old swing.
Santi's injured again.
I know. Sad times. I shouldn't have brought it up, really. He's going to end the podcast on a downer. Throwing Steve Bold would be good if he made impact. I mean, throw Granit Xhaka. He's bound to hurt somebody. any collision with him seems to involve some element of danger. I'd like Arsene Wenger to have more, better stuff to throw.
Variety
Javelin,
of objects.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Spears, yeah.
Spears.
That'd be good if people just launching spears from the touchline.
Yeah, it just hits someone in the pitch, like just stake them through the heart in the middle of the game. Well, that's what you get for doing that silly thing that you shouldn't have done. Yeah, maybe. Or, what are good things to throw? Sticks? Balls?
Stars. Yeah.
Stars, those like ninja stars
ninja
things?
Ninja stars.
Yeah. I wouldn't... do you ever watch that episode of South Park where Butters gets a ninja star in his eye?
No, I haven't
never seen that one. They pretend to be, it's like a crossover manga episode, but they pretend to be like superheroes. And someone throws a ninja star at Butters and it hits him right in the eye. And then he sort of goes crawling along the road, poor old Butters, and gets covered in fur. They try and take him to they're afraid of getting in trouble. So instead of taking him to a doctor, they glue some fur onto him and take him to a vet and pretend he's a puppy. But no, you should watch that. It's a good one.
it's an inevitable course of action.
Yeah.
What would you have? What would you throw?
What would I throw? See, I like, I like the idea of a raw egg because there's a satisfying sort of splat to it when it lands.
It's good because the shell has an impact and then the splat has a kind of, humiliating follow-up.
Yeah.
It's Yeah, it's good. It's hard to beat a raw egg, actually. Egging someone is, you know, pretty vicious.
Yeah, but I'm, you know, I'm also aware that that egg could feed a starving child. And
sure.
I wouldn't want to live with that guilt, you know? So maybe,
yeah.
Maybe what I would do is I would invent, like, an egg that came back to you, like a boomer egg. So you could throw
a
the
egg.
Yeah, like a cross between a boomerang and an egg. You throw it.
How do you lay a boomer egg? Doesn't it just pop back into the chicken?
Well, I don't know, James. Which came first, the chicken or the boomer egg?
I don't know. I think a boomer egg is a nice idea. Well, so it hits the person, explodes, but still returns. The pieces sort of gather again.
Yeah, it's like Terminator 2 where he shoots it.
It's
into
like
bits
Terminator,
and
exactly.
Just sort of like comes back together and then just arrives back at your feet or your hand. It's environmentally friendly. There's no waste. It's an amazing object to throw.
That was the obvious answer. Mm. I don't know why we didn't think of that earlier.
The boomer egg. All right, listen, this half has gone on very long, actually. Jesus.
We've gone long. I mean, that's what happens if you have a wine during the podcast.
It is. All right, well, look, thank you for your Sunday evening. It's been a pleasure.
Oh, thank you for yours, and thank you, everyone, for listening.
Thank you, of course, for listening. We have got a game against West Ham on Wednesday, so fingers crossed for that. We also have a game at the weekend against... I know we just did this, didn't we? Who the hell are we playing at the weekend? Crystal Palace.
On Monday. Palace, yeah.
Oh, Monday!
That screws up our schedule, as usual.
I fucking hate Monday football. Jesus Christ. They've just ruined our weekends.
I know.
Bastards.
Arsenal aren't playing, so they might have made our weekend, to be honest.
I wish I had a boomer egg right now. I could throw that boomer egg so hard. All right, well, look, we will have an Arsecast on Friday to talk about the game next week, Dickhead Premier League. But we'll catch you on... Oh, that means no Arsecast extra till Tuesday.
Tuesday. There we go.
All right, well, we will catch you next Tuesday. Thank you, everyone. Enjoy your lives.
Bye-bye.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.